But we begin with a fight for your genes. Over 40,000 patents on DNA molecules have been submitted by private research companies, essentially claiming the entire human genome sequence for profit. The Supreme Court will review the matter at a hearing on April 15th, and the outcome could have significant impact on personalized medicine and scientific research. Joining us to explain is Dr. Christopher Mason of the Weill Cornell Medical College's Department of Physiology and Biophysics. He's co-author of a new study that got our attention on the issue of genomic liberty. Dr. Mason, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
So patenting genes, who is doing the patenting here and what do they stand to gain from it?
So the patents come from actually thousands of different companies. Some of them even come from universities like the University of California, mainly because researchers at these institutions, as they do their research, as soon as they patent something, it goes to the university. But there are a lot of companies you'd be familiar with, like Myriad Genetics is one that's notorious in this case, the BRCA1 or breast cancer gene case. But it includes other companies like Monsanto, Incyte, Pfizer, Lilly, usually a normal range of pharmaceutical companies.
Are they patenting the entire human genome sequence or more specific pieces of it?
So we usually see particular genes patented or sub-portions of these different genes. And in our analysis, we decided to look at both these large genes, these sort of full gene patents, as well as short nucleotide or short sequence patents.
Walk us through your testing and your research to determine the potential ramifications of these fragment patents.
So I started on this subject because as I was doing research in neurogenetics and cancer genomics, you often don't know what gene is the most likely culprit for your disease or which combinations of genes. And so we often have to look at tens of genes, hundreds of genes at a time to find mutations or aberrations or problems with these different genes. And there was a paper published actually in 2005 that indicated that as many as 18% of human genes were patented, which got my attention then because it seemed strange that genes were patented. And as I looked closer at the issue, it turned out a lot of their analysis was mostly right. But what was strange is more patents kept getting issued, and there have been patents increasing in number every year since really the early 1980s on DNA. And it struck me that I really had almost, if I was just doing my normal research in my laboratory where I look at a gene and I isolate it and try and sequence it or examine mutations in that gene as a geneticist, I would almost unavoidably be infringing somebody's patent. And so it got me thinking about what else might be patented from in these longer as well as shorter sequence patents. And so in our analysis, we looked essentially at long sequence patents, which we estimate cover about 40% of all the genes, but we also looked at this more very broad class of patents that's called, you know, short sequence patents, or as small as 15 nucleotides or 15 letters, or some even 14 or 13 letters. And we found that actually if you look at the summary of all these very short patents, all of the genes in the human genome, as well as most of the other areas outside of genes, have been patented because of the very vague language of the patents, where they'll say something like, we patent any molecule with only 15 letters of our gene. So that includes hundreds or in some cases thousands of genes with just one patent.
You mentioned something early on there, personalized medicine, which we have talked in the program about. That's doctors using patients' own genes to fight specific types of cancer, for instance. What does it mean for those patients and those doctors if this continues, if all of these genes are patented? What does it mean for us?
So in that case, it really restricts to some degree what I like to say is your genomic liberty, where you have the ability to look at your DNA, or if you want to give, you know, your cells to your doctor and say, please look for mutations in genes that are, you know, look for ovarian cancer genes or breast cancer genes or prostate cancer genes, please look for mutations in these genes. And in often cases, the doctor can still order the test, but they can only order it from one place, and they can't get a second opinion from a different place, or they can't try a new test that might reveal other treatment options if it's on one gene. And more importantly, as we pointed out in our paper, that you know, cancer genes don't often just apply to one type of cancer. So whereas, you know, these companies really got a particular patent to look at, say, just breast cancer or just prostate cancer, but cancer genes are often mutated in all types of cancer from all across the body. And so they actually are restricting research on more than one type of cancer by targeting just patent on one cancer.
We're talking about your genes and the companies that hold patents on them. Our guest is Dr. Christopher Mason of the Weill Cornell Medical College. He's co-author of a new study on the issue of genomic liberty. And that's a very interesting term. Can you just define genomic liberty for us?
Yes, I'd say it is the innate right of every person to examine his or her own DNA or to do things with it that he or she might like. So this would include some people are very private with their medical information, but some people like to share their genetic information, which often reveals, say, your medical information with, say, their family members. But it's your right to do what you want with your genetic information. And so some people are very private, but some are very public because they want to share this information to help their family members. Or even some patients who've actually posted their entire genome online because they just are good citizens and want to help the field progress forward. So that, I think, is within the realm of your liberty. Also, you should be able to sequence your own DNA. You should be able to look at your own DNA and do different chemical reactions on your DNA.
You mentioned the innate right, and we know there's this upcoming Supreme Court hearing on this issue. What are they going to be looking at the Supreme Court?
So they're specifically looking at whether or not these patents that have been claimed on the BRCA1 or breast cancer associated genes should have been ever granted when they were in the mid-90s. So they're going to be examining whether they should be taken down, and that then means anyone should be able to sequence the BRCA1 genes or other genes important for a disease, or if they're upheld, and then basically then that means each company holds sway over different parts of your genome.
What would be the ideal ruling? I mean, is there middle ground for both individual liberty, scientific innovation, and these companies to be incentivized to continue doing this research that's led to these patents?
Yeah, I think there definitely could be a middle ground, and there's even been some legislative history that that parallels this. Actually, it used to be that you could patent surgical techniques. This was done in the early 90s, but it created an uproar because the American Medical Association thought it was patently ridiculous, if you can pardon the bad joke, that you could patent a specific surgical technique and that you would hold hostage a better surgical technique to someone who is in need of it just because someone hadn't paid a license fee. So the compromise that happened was the United States Congress put into the code that you can still get a patent on a surgical technique, but that people who use it are not liable for their infringing of that patent. So you can still claim yourself as the inventor, but other people don't have to always pay you for royalties for the best surgical technique. And in that case, it meant that there was some of it a balance between intellectual property recognition, but also making sure that patients get the best medical care.
Well, it certainly opens up a whole new world of ideas about what could happen with medicine and patents. Dr. Christopher Mason, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
He's assistant professor in the Department of Physiology and Biophysics at Cornell University's Weill Medical College and co-author of a startling study on genomic liberty. You can read more about the study and the upcoming Supreme Court case at wordofmouthradio.org. Now coming up, a documentary's unflinching look at injustice. We'll hear from the filmmakers behind Central Park 5 when Word of Mouth continues.